For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Thank you for being here, Bodhisattvas. Good evening. Maybe just everyone could go around and just say your first name, because I don't know everyone.
Donald.
Akash.
Jason.
Ed.
Nicole.
Who gets here? So it's nice to be here. I've been wandering around a little in the past week, so I've sat with a couple other very nice sanghas, but I'm kind of happy to be here, sitting tonight with you at home. I want to thank Gyoshin for inspiring this talk. She still doesn't know what she did, but that will be revealed. More about Gyoshin later. But, you know, I was on several airplanes in the past week, flying around, and I had time then to read the New York Times, and I happened to come across an article about a space physicist. Her name is Margaret Givelson. Does anybody know who she is? Anybody read this article? No space physicists in the room? So she developed an instrument that measures the magnetic fields of planets and satellites, which I think was kind of cool, in space. I know nothing about physics. I probably haven't opened a physics textbook for 40 years. So this isn't about physics. Hope you're all relieved about that. However, I was struck by some qualities about this person and her way of being that I thought related to the topic of the talk today, which is wonder. Wonder as a factor of enlightenment. So I'll just read the beginning of this article, which kind of drew me in, you know, and I mean, I should have just brought some of the titles of some of the other articles in the New York Times, but to say the least, you know, news is not so good these days. A little rough to read things. But this I was heartened by, so I thought I'd share it with you. So it starts out, it says, the data was nothing like Margaret Kivelson and her team of physicists even expected. It was December of 1996, and the spacecraft Galileo had just flown by Europa, an icy moon of Jupiter. The readings beamed back to the Earth, and they suggested a magnetic field emanating from the moon. Europa should not have had a magnetic field, yet there it was. And it wasn't even pointed in the right direction. So I guess there's right directions for magnetic fields. So Dr. Givelson said, this is unexpected, she recalled, saying as the weird data rolled in, and that's wonderful. So I was really struck by this sense of receiving. You know, imagine like years and years you're planning a space mission, right? Like you're thinking about, how am I going to measure what's going on here? And we're looking for Jupiter's magnetic field. And then all of a sudden, all your expectations are kind of blown away by something. And her response was, and that's really wonderful. You know, So I've been thinking about wonder as a factor of enlightenment. You know, often when we meet something that is not expected, that goes against what our views or our habits are, I don't know about you, but wonder is often not my first response. You know, there's often a jarring experience of things that are not familiar. Might say that we resist. Water is so nice and cool. Thank you, Ben. So that resistance to what is unfamiliar. I think it's because it makes us vulnerable. We really touch and feel our vulnerability when we encounter the unknown and not knowing, not being a know-it-all. So in early Buddhism, some of you may know, there are lots of lists of things, categorizing things, numbering things. And one of the lists is called the Seven Factors of Enlightenment. So this is found in very early Buddhist teaching. And I don't know if people are familiar with this, but is everyone familiar with the paramitas? Okay, many of you studied this. These are things that we cultivate to support our meditative awareness and opening qualities of our minds that we cultivate in order to fulfill our vows. And there are sort of attitudes towards the world. You know, some of the popular ones are like generosity, patience, morality. In the Seven Factors of Enlightenment, you know, there's some overlap, but there are things like relaxation of body and mind and tranquility and joy, as well as, meditative concentration and energy. But none of these lists mention wonder. So I just would like to encourage you to think about, meditate upon wonder as something to cultivate in your practice. I think it's a very good candidate for bodhisattva practices. So I think there's something about wonder that helps us invite and encounter whatever we're experiencing or whatever we're interacting with, that we can meet that with ease and joy and a kind of openness. There's a buoyancy factor, I think, to wonder. And again, it moves us away from trying to control things to opening to experience with compassion and curiosity, openness to knowing something new. There was a beautiful crescent moon in the sky this evening. I don't know if you noticed this. But sometimes it's nice to see the moon in a new way every time it miraculously appears. So I would just invite you to explore wonder as something to cultivate and explore in your lives. You know, it's both a verb and a noun. So I consulted Dr. Google to look up some definitions because I was wondering about wonder. And one definition is a feeling of surprise mingled with admiration caused by something beautiful, unexpected, unfamiliar, or inexplicable. I think that's our life. Something beautiful, unexpected, unfamiliar, and inexplicable. Another aspect of wonder is to desire or be curious to know something. You know, and in Zen we talk a lot about not knowing, but part of our knowing, intimacy is knowing and letting the known be unknown at the same time. So another version of wonder is polite inquiry. Like, it's used to express a polite question or request. So it might be like, I wonder if it's a good idea that a certain person occupies the White House. I wonder about that. You know? And so there's something about wondering which invites a kind of openness, but it's not like, you shouldn't be there. It's like, I wonder if, you know, when I walked in the door, I was asked, what should we chant today? And I wondered whether it would be a good idea to chant the Genjo Koan. But maybe not. And I thought, yeah, maybe not. There's also, we need a little bit of time because there's a surprise chant in the mix for us this evening. So, thank you, Taigen, for wondering about that with me. Taigen wondered whether it might not be such a good idea to chant such a long thing like the Genjo Koan. I fully agree. So Margie Givelson turns 90 years old this month. And, you know, when she first was in school, in college, she went to Harvard. But actually, they didn't let women into Harvard. They sequestered them in a place called Radcliffe College. I don't know if any of you are even old enough to remember that. You know, so it's like the women got shuffled over to Radcliffe, because you couldn't mix them up. And even though someone had told her that really her job in college was to get married, she still studied physics. And she actually ended up getting a PhD from Radcliffe in physics. And she's been an active part of like every major interplanetary NASA exploration for 40 years now. Which I think is interesting that we know about her, or I didn't. So, you know, there were a lot of pictures of her. There were a few, at least, in this article. And, you know, in at least one of them, she was the only woman in the picture with a bunch of male physicists. And I think she might have had kind of some challenging experiences in her life, but still, in every photo I've seen of her, she has this, like, smile with some wonder and joy. And I think that there's something about her practice of wonder that is a nice thing to know about in this world where people maybe lack a little bit of wonderfulness at times. Currently, even though she is a retired professor, emerita, as they say, at UCLA, she still goes to her office every day and hosts parties once a week, dinner parties for her and her students and other faculty. And there was another great description of this, which I have to share with you. It says, so this is the weekly party with Margie Givelson. Attendees share their current research and discuss the latest advances in space physics. The reviews of one another's work can be rollicking, sharp and animated, but not heated or antagonistic. When the laptops lining the table fail them, when they've exhausted Google, I guess, the scientists dash to their offices and pull out 50-year-old textbooks to win one point or another. Humor punctuates disagreements, and attendees pass chocolate around the table. Now, to me, this is the way to live. This is a product of wonder and intimacy. And just like the expression of everyday life, kind of like what Douglas was talking about, you know, the tea and rice of our life, engaging the world with this practice of wonder. I want to get back to Gyoshin. You're not getting off the hook so easily. So I was having a conversation with Gyoshin and wondering what she was up to. And she was telling me that she was spending some time hanging out at the checking out the bird sanctuary at Montrose Harbor along the lakefront. You know, there's all these bird sanctuaries around here, the city. And she gleefully described seeing a bird I had never heard of called a parasitic jaeger. Has anyone heard of such? Are you any other birders besides Gyotian? Would you like to tell us what you saw?
Well, there's...
Just describe what you told me, if you remember.
Yes, there's no kind of jaeger, but... So, if you watch gulls flying, they sort of fly like this along the lake, and then if there's a jaeger, all of a sudden you see this massive, powerful bird, about the same size as gull, come tearing through, terrorizing the gulls, picking one out, and forcing it to puke, and that's what it eats. That's how it makes its living. That's why it's a parasitic. It finds a gull that has just caught a fish, and then it bullies it into puking up the fish, and that's what it eats.
And that's quite well. Right, see the happiness? So this is gobbling up vomit. And Gyotian told me this.
It's all that digested, but I mean, it's sort of...
Even better, right? Like it's half, it's squirming around, kind of half bitten. So Gyotian actually, you know, you told me of the exact experience. You were like, I saw this parasitic jaeger.
It's a really rare bird.
You know, crash into this seagull and poke the seagull in the belly, and it threw up this fish and it gobbled it up. And I was just like, wow. This is wonder. There was no hint of disgust. There was no hint of judgment about these birds and their unusual activity. There was no grasping or clinging. You know, this is just pure wonder at this world that we can never completely understand. How did this ever come to be? Parasitic jaeger. Because jaeger must come from like some Germanic term to hunt, right? So I think that meeting our lives with this kind of curiosity and openness and flexibility and polite inquiry. Like, I think you were probably pretty polite when you were watching all these birds doing their thing. You were honoring their way of being in this world and witnessing it with an engagement, you know, not like a zombie, but with an engagement and a curiosity and a desire to know something. That how can we know a bird? How can we know anything? You know, you might remember that actually wonder was a factor of Buddha's awakening, as I recall. You know, Buddha was meditating intensely after some intense experiences, was settled. And I think the story goes something like, and we're going to celebrate this at Rohatsu, right? Buddha looks up and sees Venus, the morning star. I was like, yeah, wow. I saw this thing. I see, you know, probably in India at that time, there weren't that many clouds. And you probably saw the morning star a lot, but still saw it in this new way. So this is the kind of like not knowing even the known. You know, there's just a little preamble. Can't help but do this. Someday, what case are you on in Book of Serenity, Teigen?
I'll be doing case 9 next Monday.
Case 9. So...
About a cat.
So, case 20 has this line that's really wonderful. Not knowing is most intimate. It also says something else. Hold to the moment before thought arises. This is wonder. And there's a vulnerability in our intimacy with this world, and with an intimacy of wonder, this place where wonder seems where knowing and not knowing come together. So, you know, hold to that moment sometimes and just check it out. But there's something else about wonder that I thought we could explore together. So I know that there are some trained vocal artists in the audience. I know Gyoshin loves to sing. I know that Aishin has operatic training, I believe. Anyone else like to sing? Just a little on occasion? Yeah, great. So I'm going to pass out. We can do a little like our own karaoke a cappella. So maybe like you can, maybe Ben, you'll share with me. By another one of our great ancestors. The recording that's most common is by Louis Armstrong. But Joey Ramone does a great cover, just in case you want a little different energy with that. And so please share. I can't sing this, so maybe we can all do it together and help each other. But this is a little song about wonder. So maybe you could pass that and Dylan, I think Dylan and Gyoshin can share it. Some of you might know it. So ready, bodhisattvas? I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, wilds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, and also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world. So thank you, bodhisattvas, for sharing a little bit of wonder. And if you're wondering about anything or you want to comment, please share it. Gyoshin. Aishin. Yeah.
It made me think of the word Tathagata and the way that, you know, that Buddha is the thus come one, and that we can ask ourselves the question all the time of everything that's happening, what is this that thus comes? That's I think, a kind of
absolutely. And that is what realizes the Dharmakaya. That is how Buddha, we go beyond Buddha in our own awakening. How you go beyond Buddha in your own awakening.
Attachment or engagement.
engagement, you know, or like hold kind of has a play on maybe both sides, or you know, how to navigate that.
I can say something, but don't necessarily believe it. So maybe hold lightly to the moment before thought arises, but study that. So take your wonder and curiosity and direct it right at that edge where a thought is about to bloom and see what happens. You might see a parasitic Jaeger poke a seagull in its belly and then gobble up whatever's dropped.
Sometimes you can appreciate things because they fit into the category you're looking for. And wonder is not. Wonder is not trying to fit it into something.
Right.
It's completely, it's different. I appreciate that you come up with that. Look for other states of mind.
So I wondered about that. Because I was thinking, you know, I didn't nerd out too much on this, but I was thinking, I wonder if there is some kind of Abhidharmic Buddhist Sanskrit term for wonder. And then I just gave that up, so somebody else can wonder about that. But I think this is the creative engagement in our lives, right? Like, wonder is not that new, not new to me. It's been wandering around the planet, wandering for a long time in our language, or at least in some kind of Germanic derived language. But so I think that that's everything in our life. We can bring our own creative engagement. You know, Buddha got us a little bit of a start with all these lists of things, you know, and they've been elaborated on. But find your own. Wonder about, what is it for me that's the practice to call? Like, I thought, oh, I might practice with wonder for a couple years now. You know, like check in and go, is wonder being expressed in every act of my body, speech, and mind? And when is that limited? When is it not being expressed? What happens? How does that feel? How does the world respond to that? So I think any of these practices, please wonder about your own and find what that means for you. That's how I play around with these things. So, thanks. Akash, hi.
Thank you, Ms. Togetsu. I really appreciate that you brought this topic, because now that I kind of dwelling on what you were saying, it feels like wonder is something that, for me, it ties together many of the seven factors of enlightenment that are on this list here, because it helps us overcome dullness in the sense of not always just falling into the habits of our perception and realizing that our thoughts and our perceptions actually require some effort, and it's not just something as far as falling into our habit. And that kind of, for me, I feel like that drops away any kind of dullness factor, even like our ordinary reality or our idea of cause and effect with things. And then that also brings us kind of like an energy. It shows how we invest our energy into everything. Something that was even science and value in the process of trying to get enlightened or just ordinary life.
Yeah, be kind to people. or kind to whatever is coming up in your own dullness and distraction. What is it when dullness and distraction are struck aside, the affirming mind naturally accords? Is that what that says? So, yeah, thank you. You said it better than I could. I have to write that down for another Dharma talk, but thank you.
A phrase that's coming up for me as you're talking about it, and I love the sense of wonder, but another way to talk about it maybe is kind of creative questioning.
Mm-hmm.
What is this that does consolation?
Right.
In this space where we're hanging out, waiting for a thought to arise or wonder.
Right.
Just to be going on. And it's creative in that, not that you're creating something else, but there's this the mutual creativity of
the myriad things come forth.
Yeah.
But I think the polite inquiry, respectful inquiry, open inquiry, you know, without this kind of judgmental tone that shuts things down. That's part of that creativity that I think you're talking about, Tai. Does that sound? Yeah.
And not holding on to some view or answer, but just open to.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity comes from openness.
Mm-hmm.
I love the. Tell me the name of the physicist, the woman physicist.
Margie Givelson.
Givelson.
Yeah, it's in. There's like a little thing that said discovery section of today's New York Times, at least. It was featured in the science section earlier when I read it, but today I was looking for it to review it for this talk, and I saw it said discovery, and I'm like, oh, how nice. Yes, good category. Yoshin.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of the ability to be open enough and curious enough that you actually end up creating something new. That you have to get to that state of wonder before you're ready to do that. So it really, I mean, art and science are looking for new things, but you have to be open to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful sangha we have here, you know. One thing I wanted to say is also be open to wondering about our lack of wonder. Because there is a tendency to want to get it right and say, oh, I got to be open all the time. But when I see a lack of wonder arise, I'm like, wow. You know, it's like that gull getting punched in the gut by the Jaeger. Gobble up the fish that gets spit out of your own karma, of your own half-digested practice. You know, so there's a encouragement in that. That's sort of, you know, because like wonder can be a little, like you can get a little intoxicated because it has, you know, kind of a little dash of joy in it. And, you know, but I like it because there's a little energy to that. But again, with anything, if you try to fix it, hold on to it, see what happens.
On that note, we'll close with our other wonderful song, which is the 4.7 Vows, which we chant.